I suck at jujitsu? How do I suck less?
I guess
you
suck less.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the diabolical leader of the Headlock Squad,
Hey everybody, this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So today we are going to do something a little fun, and this is something that I've never done before. We're going to look at the unwritten rules of Jiu-Jitsu, and there are certain rules that I believe apply on every single mat that I've ever been on. And I'm going to share those rules with you guys. And some of these rules are just to not be a jerk, you know, and to just teach you how to not be a jerk. But some of them are to teach you some habits that will convince you to do jiu-jitsu forever and let you build that skill of consistency that we talk about all the time. And this will also, just as a coach, if you listen to this, I'm going to talk about certain rules that aren't things that you post up on the wall, things that we don't really talk about as much, but really have so much to do with the culture of your gym. And if they have to do with the culture of your gym, they have to do with the business side of your gym too. If the culture is bad, the business side typically isn't very good either. And so let's go ahead and jump into today's episode. I think you guys are really going to like this one. This one is, this one's fun. The five unwritten laws of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, as written by Josh McKinney. So who knows if these are really even unwritten laws. But the first one to me is probably the most important. And the reason that I say that is because all other laws are going to come from this first one. And so this is kind of how I look at it. Rule number one, unwritten rule number one, and this is how I have guided my gym from day one. It is this: the mats shall be enforced. And that is, to me, I don't think that anybody is actually rolling in their grave if you're not doing self-defense jiu-jitsu, or if you are only doing competitive jiu-jitsu, or whatever, right? I don't think that that really matters to the quote-unquote jiu-jitsu gods, right? I think the only responsibility that we actually have as grapplers, as Brazilian jiu-jitsu grapplers, not sambo, not wrestling, not something different, as jiu-jitsu people, we have to represent our art. And contrary to popular belief, that doesn't mean that you have to be the most respectful person, that you have to be the best person in the world. Those things are all great and ideal. But you've got to be able to defend the art. If you are somebody that wears a black belt and you are physically still capable of rolling, and somebody can come in off the street and submit you, that isn't very good defense of the art. That isn't good representation of the art. That is kind of my rule for black belt. You know, is that somebody isn't going to come off the street and beat you as a black belt. Unless, of course, there are definitely physical limitations to certain things. But I've rolled with black belts that are young athletic guys and are just terrible. And I go, man, I've had people come into my gym that go really, really hard and have a couple months of wrestling experience, and they could probably beat you, or at least really, really frustrate you, hold you down, make you have to go so hard to even show that jiu-jitsu works. And so that is, like, being able to have that on your mats, I think, is so important. And this sounds like this macho, kind of a silly thing, but I promise this is so important, because anyone who runs a jiu-jitsu school or has for a long time will agree with me. The attitude of the gym typically comes from the top guys, and usually not from the coach, even if the coach is the top guy. Now, the coach usually can moderate who is second below him if the coach is good at jiu-jitsu, right? If the coach is able to beat people down when he needs to beat people down. But not all coaches can do that. And so making sure that you are putting your time and effort into people who not only have some jiu-jitsu giftings, not only are super consistent, but have the attitudes that you want to encourage for all your students. Because I've seen it in really good gyms where, like, the best guy was this awesome guy, and he was, you know, underneath the coach, but he was this fair and just ruler, and he kept everybody on the straight and narrow, and he helped everybody. He kind of taught everybody the habit of, like, helping the next guy try to get as good as you or get better than you. And he's done that. And then one day, maybe he goes and he starts his own jiu-jitsu school, or whatever happens, and he leaves. And then all of a sudden, the culture totally shifts overnight, because now there's no leadership. Even though there is a head coach, and he is the head coach, it's just different when it comes to, like, you know, this guy owns the business. This guy has to be here. This guy is the head coach. That guy right underneath him is typically going to be where the attitude of the gym comes from. And if he's really big into competition, you'll usually have more competitors. If he's really big into self-defense, you will usually have more people doing self-defense. But the beauty of jiu-jitsu, and this is also a problem with jiu-jitsu, we were actually talking about the Robert Drysdale quote last week, where he said, there's this weird thing in jiu-jitsu that if I can't beat you up, you don't listen to anything I say. And that's so true, and it really shouldn't be this way. There are people that I can beat up. There are a lot of people that I can beat up that honestly have so much value to give me when they explain stuff to me, when they teach me. And so for me, it's like a matter of asking those people questions. Because you can always say, like, okay, well, yeah, I can beat those people up, but maybe I'm 30 pounds heavier than him. That makes a big difference, you know? Maybe I am 10 years younger than him. That makes a big difference, you know? And so going with that mindset of, oh, if this guy can beat me, then I should listen to everything he says. And if he can't, then I shouldn't. And the real reason this is a problem is because you can do jiu-jitsu kind of organically without having to think about it and get really good and not be able to explain what the heck you're doing. And so I see that all the time with guys. They say, oh, yeah, the only way to get as good as me is to train 3 times a day and then to lift every day. And it's like, yeah, that's not why you're good. You know, you're good because of these specific things that you do. And when you can't highlight those, it's hard to teach. But anyway, that's kind of a off on a tangent. But as you look on the mats, you will always see, like, oh, this is the top guy or the top couple guys. You know, usually there's 4 or 5. But if those guys all have a bad attitude, that's when you see gyms split up a lot of the time. Or if they don't like the coach, they don't get along, you'll see gyms split up, right? Because it's this weird leadership dynamic. And it comes with, I guess, I wouldn't even say it comes with belt promotion. It just comes with, we're all training live all the time, trying to see who the best is, or trying to get better, but you are seeing who the best is all the time. And so often, the best is just going to be that leader, and his or her attitude is going to pour out to the rest of the team. And so it is really important as a coach to have an enforcer and to know who that is. For me, I know about this rule because since I was a blue belt, I was my coach's mat enforcer. Because, and there is a perfect mat enforcer, you know, and I'll give you a few examples. So, like, we have this term at Head Nod, and honestly, I think it's probably a St. Louis Jiu-Jitsu term. I've heard this at other gyms even, and so, but we just have this term, and we call it a green light, right? And so, if you green light somebody, that is, you know, that's a call to action for the best guys in the room, right? And ideally, your gym is good enough that those best guys can always handle whatever situation it is. Because, for example, if somebody is going too hard and they're beating everybody down, but they're hurting people and they're just going too hard, and the coach sits them down and says, hey, you need to not go so hard. And so then the guy goes, okay, why, right? And the coach can say, oh, your training partners, whatever. right? You got to be gentle to your training partners. But like, is that really a great answer? Because he goes, well, when I was going hard, I was beating all my training partners. And now that I'm going easy, I can't beat them. And so you're telling me to not go hard. Versus I send one of the brown belts in and I say, hey, effortlessly beat this guy down. Make him gas. Do it until he starts going easy, right? Until he starts to go, oh, I need to learn to go at this pace. Which one do you think works better? Because I've experimented with both. I promise you, you can have that conversation with that idiot a million times. Most of the time, they're going to just keep being who they are. But if you let them go to school in the school of hard knocks, if you let them get some pressure put on them a little bit, not hurt, but just, we proved that jiu-jitsu works. And it works effortlessly, and it works over and over and over again. And you do that, a lot of times their attitude adjusts. And I've seen that over and over and over again. And so when we're looking at, like I said, all the other unwritten rules come from, you've got to be able to enforce the rules. Whatever the unwritten rules are at your gym, whatever you guys find valuable, whatever you guys find important, that matters. But in order to keep that, if you roll live, you've got to be able to have that attitude in your best guys and keep your best guys happy, keep them there. Just kind of my thought on what a mat enforcer shouldn't be. So there was this one time. We call this the Blue Room. This is our original gym. And it was a rougher place to train, you know, as Head Nod is now, but Head Nod now is probably a little more professional than it was back then. Definitely a lot more professional than it was back then. Anyway, one day there's this guy. I won't repeat his name. Let's call him Timmy. I think Timmy's a good name. And now Timmy is a big old boy. 260, has wrestling experience, is tough. One day, Timmy is going with one of my purple belts who's 130 and is just trying to neck crank him. This guy's only been training for a couple weeks at my gym, but he's done, you know, bend your finger back jujitsu somewhere random. I talked to my guy because this guy's big, right? And I can beat him up, but again, it's just different when the coach does it. And so I'm like, okay, this guy's big. I never ask Eric Huebner to mat enforce for me. Eric Huebner, Combat Wrestling Hall of Famer. Eric Huebner, ultra heavyweight. Eric Huebner, the best wrestler that I know and can be one of the meanest people that I know. I look at Eric and I say, hey, Eric, have you rolled with Timmy yet? And I gave him the look and Eric smiled and said, okay. And the next round, he went with Timmy. And it was not Clash of the Titans. It was very one-sided. And there was this point where Eric almost decapitated him. And when I saw it, like, it up until then, I was feeling pride. But then when, like, that guy's head almost came off and I was, like, looking through all the waivers to make sure that he had signed one, I was like, you know what? Eric's not allowed to mat enforce for me anymore. He can't be the guy. Because like I said, I was Kyle's mat enforcer. And the reason was because I was chubby and small and a kid. You know what I mean? And so like we trained at an MMA school, right? There were guys coming in that were in the UFC. There were guys coming in that were trying to get into the UFC. And there were people coming from all over the world to train MMA. So you got a lot of attitude that would stay over after the pro MMA class and do the jiu-jitsu class. And Kyle, in order to like let people know, hey, you should be learning jiu-jitsu under me, he would be like, hey, roll with 16-year-old Josh. And I would beat those guys up, be really respectful, be really nice, and, you know, send them on their way. And a lot of times, you know, I didn't realize that was what was happening. I was just beating people up. I wasn't trying to be any more than the hammer in this situation. But a lot of the times what happened is the guys that stayed, their attitude would adjust. They would become better training partners. They would stay after and become my training partners, and it would be really helpful to me. And so just seeing that firsthand, that like mat enforcing works really, really well. And it was really, just a really cool thing to be able to experience early. And then to just know, like, man, even if you have the craziest people coming in, if you have the right mat enforcers and the right leadership, just that level underneath you as a coach, I think that you are going to be in good shape. And so, that's just random thoughts on the reasons to beat people up. Okay, so next one is rule number two. It's hard to read my handwriting, but it says, oh, this is a good one. Don't ask me my weight after we roll. Just don't make excuses on the mat. People do this all the time. We talk about how the reason mat enforcers work is because you can't be full of crap when you do jiu-jitsu, right? You either won or you lost. You either got submitted or you didn't, right? Or, you know, you got beat down points-wise. You got physically beaten down. You know who won or lost generally in a round, right? And what people will try to do to take away from that is they'll say something like, hey, what do you weigh? Like, oh, I weigh 190. And like, okay. I weigh 187. So that's why, you know, and honestly, I might even be 185 right now, if I'm being honest. I've been, you know, pretty dehydrated today. And I've been having muscle cramps, and, you know, you're so much bigger than me. I don't even really train in the gi. I only do no gi. And so me coming in into the gi today, or into the gi in this tournament, I don't really do this rule set. Any excuse. It's just to make yourself feel better. Even if it's true, it helps you in no way. Even if you lost because the guy was just significantly bigger than you, it doesn't matter, because your job as a grappler is to get good enough to beat that guy that is significantly bigger than you and make it not matter, right? And as soon as you make it the excuse of he only won because he's bigger, well, you're just accepting that that is always going to be. He's always going to be bigger. He's always going to win. Versus, man, yeah, he can be bigger than me, but he gets way too close to me. And a big guy like that, getting that close, is going to beat me every time. I've got to be better at keeping him away from me. I've got to be better at playing top on him. And you make it go on you, and then you get better. Or you make the excuse, and everybody in your gym hates you. It is the most readable excuse. And same exact idea. You will not hear people say that at my gym. You will not hear the small guys say that at my gym. They don't care. And the reason is because that group that Matt enforces, if you beat them, they'll be like, holy smokes, that was good, dude. And they will focus on getting better and try to kill you next time, as it should be. But it won't be, oh yeah, he beat me because I was exhausted today, or he beat me because of this or that. It'll just be like, you know, he beat me. If he beat you nefariously, you know, we'll talk about some nefarious ways to win jiu-jitsu rounds in just a second, I think in two rules. But if he did something like that, then maybe we go back to rule number one. Hey, coach, this guy was, he was vulturing me. He was waiting for me to be tired, and then he came out and sat out six rounds, showed up 10 rounds late, and then blitzed me hard, you know? When somebody does that, and you tell the team, that's the beauty of having four or five enforcers. You know what I mean? You guys ever play any of the Game Boy, like advanced Game Boy Color Pokemon games, like Pokemon Emerald, Pokemon Red, Pokemon Green? I don't know if there were other ones. I know there were other ones, but who knows what they are. But anyway, you play those games. You have a level 60 Pokemon, right? You're unbeatable. You go, you play enough rounds in a row, get hurt enough, that level 60 Pokemon's gone. You have six Pokemon on your roster that are all level 60, even six that are level 55. You're so much better off. Right? And so when it comes to jiu-jitsu mat enforcers, hey, it's a long open mat. And so if we've got to double up, triple up, quadruple up, we got to do it. You know, that's how it is. The rule of the mat enforcer, it's always fun when I get people on the podcast and we talk about that, because every school has that, or the coach has to do it. And I think about sometimes certain people will tell me that they are going to start teaching jiu-jitsu, and I'll be like, bro, what if somebody tough came in? You wouldn't be able to handle it. You know, you wouldn't be able to show them that jiu-jitsu worked. And not like, oh, what if a purple belt came in? But like, what if somebody with just a little grappling experience that was strong and athletic and was good at staying on top and didn't follow standard jiu-jitsu principle rules where if I make your butt touch, you just start playing guard. He just wrestled up from everything and you had to deal with that. Would you be able to? No? Then you need somebody at your gym that can. Because if not, those rules are going to get, they are going to get made for you. Your gym is going to be full of excuse makers. It's going to be full of jerks. It's going to be full of people that you just don't want. And so, yeah, back to that initial idea is those habits, when you see them, you mat enforce on them. All right, now we'll look at number three. And this is, all crying should be done in the bathroom. And that is not to say that you're not allowed to cry in jiu-jitsu. There's just no crying on the mats. You know, you start to cry on the mats, you go in the bathroom, you cry, look at yourself in the mirror, try to catch your breath. You know, when it's time, you move on. You go back to your rounds. If you haven't cried doing jiu-jitsu, I feel like there's something wrong with you. I've cried at least twice in the last year, like in the last calendar year, right? Yeah, at least. If you're not putting enough passion into your jiu-jitsu that you cry in discouragement sometimes, I don't think you're really doing jiu-jitsu. But also, that being said, and we named this one, you know, crying should be done in the bathroom. That's actually just a thing that my wife told me one time. She was like, yeah, I just, you know, this happened on the mat. I was struggling. And she's like, so I just went to the bathroom, had to cry a little bit. And I came out, I was fine. I just went back to training. And I was just like, oh, okay, that's a good idea. But the reason I said that is because, like, the continuation is crying should be done in the bathroom, not on Facebook, not on Reddit, and not behind the person's back, right? Again, if the person needs beat up, then you call the crew and you have them beat up. But I don't be like, oh, yeah, I don't roll with this guy because he's this, you know? He always ankle locks, and I hate people that ankle lock. And then, yeah, let's none of us roll with him, right? Nah, don't do that. Don't make some post about him on Facebook. You're not 12. Don't go on Reddit and go, I'm just going to be hypothetical here, and then call out all the people you hate in your gym so you can feel vindicated, because that's all that is. It's just like, it literally is the exact same thing as saying somebody weighed more than you. You know, in like, oh, making that excuse. Anytime that you make that social excuse of like, I need to bash people on social media, or I need to bash people on Reddit, on my team especially, that's honestly, you're kind of being a weenie, you know? And you just see that and you go, okay, that is like, that is a habit that you see in jiu-jitsu so much now, just in general. But you see a lot of old school guys be so upset about it because it was an unwritten rule. You used to like that people would get killed for talking about how their round went with a good guy. Like if you beat a black belt, if you mentioned it to anybody when I was coming up, like even brought it up, people would in the group would be like, hey, don't talk about that, dude. It was very, very normal to be that way. And then you transition at 10 years and or 15 years, and you have Reddit where people will call out their coach and tag the website and be like, this guy is whatever, right? And you know, and bash them or call out just different people. Not that that's always wrong. Sometimes it's very helpful to the community that happens. But there is a difference between like a coach sexually abusing students and you getting your feelings hurt because a blue belt cross-faced you too hard and the coach said, hey, this is jiu-jitsu. That's part of jiu-jitsu, right? And so, when you have something, when that happens, go cry in the bathroom. Keep it to yourself. And that is not to say that you are not allowed to have emotions. It's just jiu-jitsu teaches you to manage emotions because emotions never, ever, ever help you on the mat. It is never helpful for you to be sad when you're rolling. It's never like, oh man, I got to get really sad and then I can go better. I can think better, right? Even angry people that will talk about that. I want to feel angry when I go and compete. And it's like, you don't always have control over how you feel. You have control over how you be. What I mean by that is when I go to compete, I don't want to get nervous. I don't want to feel nerves, but I always feel nerves when I compete, regardless of where we're at, regardless of how many times I've beaten my opponent. And I've talked to a lot of competitors. We all deal with this. We feel nerves, but I can be gangster, right? And still feel nervous. I can be confident and still feel nervous. They are two different things, right? What I decide I'm going to be that day, the actions that I am going to do, and the way I feel, right? They are separate things. Jiu-jitsu helps you learn that they are separate things because sometimes you will feel panicked being smashed in a position. You'll feel panicked out of exhaustion. You'll be almost hyperventilating. And you are feeling like you are going to die. And when you can learn to feel like you're going to die, but still fight, but still grapple, but still escape, but still think, still be in control of yourself, you're learning to control your emotions. Because like no emotion is worse than the feeling of death, the feeling of panic, right? And like this is bad enough that we shouldn't be here anymore. And you have the easy option. You could just tap in all those positions. And most of us in jiu-jitsu, we just naturally learn, like, my head being squeezed, it ain't that big of a deal. Who cares? And, so that is why I think that you should learn to cry in the bathroom and not feel vindicated because you got all your emotions out, you know, on Facebook. And that is my third rule. We have two more. And I think that they're both really good, really valuable. But right now, we will move to a quick commercial break before we come back with the last two unwritten rules of jiu-jitsu. Hey guys, this is Josh McKinney. Just wanted to interrupt the podcast really quick and tell you about the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show Pro. And so if you've been listening, we've put out 250 plus episodes on the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. All of this content has been free. We've put out a lot of different YouTube content that's been free, but we have always pushed different instructionals that I've made on my website, simplifyingjiujitsu.com. And we've always sold those instructionals at a premium price. I really feel like the amount of effort, the amount of time, and the amount of information that we put into these courses is always worth the price that we kind of sell them for. But we're getting to this point that if you wanted to kind of learn the whole picture, it's becoming hard because it's becoming expensive. And so when I look at the instructionals that I have on the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu or on simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com, we have the duck guard. We have how to learn jiu-jitsu that me and my dad did together. We have the essentials of jiu-jitsu Kimura, where we look at mastering the Kimura. I have four different seminars, some on guard passing, some on upper body control that I have on the website, and I now have the Trinity of Guard Passing on the website. And if you add all that up, all those different courses, it ends up being like $800. And for me personally, if I'm being honest with you guys, I couldn't afford to invest $800 into online jiu-jitsu learning right now. But I could afford to invest $20. And that is what I decided to make all of these instructionals that I just told you guys on the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show Pro. I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show Pro is available for only $20 a month. There is no contract. You can cancel anytime. You can watch all of those instructionals in 1 month if you really wanted to, and then cancel right after that. And so the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show Pro is so worth it right now. And each month, we are going to be adding a new course, a new premium podcast. In June, we have planned Master Any Position in 6 weeks. We have a plan on doing a version 2 of the Duck Guard, where we add some new concepts of playing guard that we've been working on that are super helpful to getting into single leg X to K guard. We have so many different plans of things that we're going to be adding into the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show Pro. And if you guys want to join us, we would love to have you. That is only available at simplifyingjiujitsu.com/suck. That is S-U-C-K, and that link will be in the description. And it is also exclusively the only place to get the Trinity of Guard Passing, my newest instructional. And so that's all I have for you. Let's go ahead and get back to the episode. Rule number 4, the rules of the call out. Now, this one is different from the other rules. I've kind of given what I think that the rule should be with the first three. This is how it should be executed. Now, the fourth rule, I hear arguments for different reasons for having these rules. And I will tell you guys what my rule is at my gym. But that is to say that I think that this is different gym to gym, and this is going to be different depending on how, the whole goal of the gym. A lot of the time, it will be dependent on if you are competitors. It will be dependent on all kinds of different things like that. But there are always going to be rules on callouts. So, for instance, some gyms, you cannot call out a higher belt. You can't ask a higher belt to roll. This is something I don't really care for. I think that like the standard of that is just not the case anymore. Most places I go, the reason that I think that it used to be is so nobody, we talked about like trying to vulture somebody like, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, this guy's dead. I'm going to go and try to pick the bones off the carcass, right? And you try to call him out right when he's tired, when you're rested. And I think people would be like, oh, yeah, don't do that to black belts. That's disrespectful, right? And the truth is, yes, I think that is the case. But also, the ability to say no to a round is also very important for the laws at my gym. If I don't want to roll with you, I don't need to roll with you. And there is, I don't need an explanation. I don't have to make an excuse. No. Okay. That's it, right? And so since that is the rule, if I am that tired black belt and I don't feel like going with this guy, I'll just go, no. A lot of times I'll yell at you, but it's not a rule. You know, nobody cares. I'm going to beat you up the next round really, really, really bad. Yeah, you're allowed to call me out. I don't care. But if you call me out regardless, you're going to get beat up. I don't know. You know, that's probably, I assume that's why you called me out, was in order to get beat up. So I don't know. The call out's weird because with like, when you become a black belt, I think it becomes more awkward. A lot of the times you meet a different black belt, you're like, okay, I want to roll with this guy. Because that's what we do in jiu-jitsu, is more curiosity than anything. Yeah, we want to beat the guy up, but more like if he could beat me up, I want to know that. I want to be aware of that. And so like if he starts to, well, then I will, I will be aware. I'll start to adjust to that. But that is just kind of when I think about the call, those are like my big things. But I have heard some other thoughts on kind of how people do it. And for instance, I have a friend who was saying that he doesn't like calling out black belts. And his argument really was like, yeah, dude, people will do it because their goal is to beat the black belt. And he's like, and I think that's a dumb goal to have. He goes, I don't think you should have the goal of like, yeah, I want to try to beat my black belt that helps me all the time and goes easy on me all the time. And then when he's really tired, I should try to beat him. And I'm like, you know what? That's a valuable argument. For me as a competitor, though, it's nice. And this is different. I am a competitor and a coach, right? And so it is different for me. If I'm not a competitor anymore, maybe it changes. But for me right now, the ability to get pushed when I'm struggling, when I'm really tired, that is not something I've always been able to have in my training, especially as a coach. It's only been a few years that the gym has been that level that I can just, no matter who's there at night, I know I'm going to get pushed and it'll be hard, especially as I get tired. And the ability to do that is awesome. That's why I don't have a call out rule. Little note also, on the you have tight space and your rolling rule, should you have to move for the higher belt. These things are things that are different from gym to gym. And if I ever go to somebody's gym and they have these rules, I will always respect them. They're just whatever their rules are, I won't be there. If the rule is so significant that I don't want to train, then I just won't train. I just won't go to that gym, right? But yeah, if you have rules, I will always respect them. But here is another jiu-jitsu rule that I think doesn't make sense. And it is moving out of the way for the higher belt. And this is not a respect thing. I think that you should be respectful of everybody on the mat when you are rolling, because you could roll into somebody, whether they're a lower belt or a higher belt, and hurt them, or more likely kick somebody and hurt them. And so when I see this, it's like people will always be like, yeah, move for the higher belt. But sometimes you just don't see, and the higher belt maybe sees you and expects you to move, but you don't see them, and then you're getting run into, right? Versus both everybody looking out for one thing. How I look at it is if you can see somebody's feet, then you should move, okay? And the reason that I say that is because the biggest injury that will happen because of people running into each other is getting kicked in the head. It's the only injury. I used to have a 700-square-foot gym, and we would have 40 people rolling live on that mat, and that is not enough space. Definitely not safe. People would be rolling on the carpet at points. But anyway, a big thing, the only injuries that we ever had come of that were people getting concussions from getting kicked in the head. And so that's when we changed the rule from higher belt, be respectful, all this stuff, to if you see feet, move. Because that means they can't see you and your head is close to their feet. Okay, so that means that it is your responsibility. And so honestly, how we usually would do it when we... You know, some people don't actually have enough space for everybody to roll live, so you could do A team, B team, or whatever. But what I've always liked is, like, you do that, and even if you bump into each other, most of the time it's not a big deal at all, because you're like, the top players are bumping each other's butts, right? It's not like we're in a weird position where somebody gets kicked in the head. One time people were drilling takedowns. This is the wildest thing I've ever seen. Two guys drilled them at the exact same time. They were 10 feet apart. But as both guys fell, they both landed at the exact same time and their head hit together like coconuts. That was wild. That was just a freak accident. That's always, those things happen in jiu-jitsu. But if you really just follow that rule of seeing feet, you will protect yourself so much when it comes to tight space rolling. And then number five, and this is the last unwritten rule. In some places this is written, but I do feel like this is an easily forgotten rule. And again, this isn't really going to be written on most jiu-jitsu walls, and that is have fun, enjoy jiu-jitsu, keep it playful, whatever you want to use for that term, but make sure that you keep jiu-jitsu as something that you enjoy, because no matter how serious it gets, it's like everything that I do, every bit of money that I make, including my wife's job, because she's the general manager at our gym, like all the money that comes into our house, it comes from jiu-jitsu. All the work effort that we put in goes towards something jiu-jitsu related. And so if somebody were to take jiu-jitsu serious, it could be me, but I don't. And that's just because jiu-jitsu's fun. It's a game. Make sure to play it, right? There's this point in the movie Moneyball where they're telling Billy Bean when he's, I think they're telling his parents when he's like 19. He's really young, and I think he's able to go to college, but they're telling him, hey, there's this point in every player's life where they get told it's time to stop playing the game. And they go, you know, and for most kids, it's right now, but your son can keep playing the game. And I love that sale, you know, and that's what those guys do, is they're trying to sell the kid to get him to sign. But I love that sale of, you know, like, hey, do you want to keep playing? Right? Do you want to, because at a point, you're going to be a grown-up and you're not going to get to play anymore, right? And jiu-jitsu lets us escape that. Jiu-jitsu lets us go back and say, I get to play again. And when you make it stressful, not when you make it your job, it can be your job, it can be your livelihood, but you want to keep it fun. And so if it becomes your livelihood, being fun in jiu-jitsu may change. It may shift to coaching. It may shift to teaching. It may shift to going to competitions. It may shift to refereeing. It may shift to online presence. It may shift to something else, but a different expression of jiu-jitsu. And you have fun with it. And if you just make sure that you are having fun with jiu-jitsu, consistency is so much easier. Hard work is so much easier because you have a reason to show up. And the reason isn't, I need to be great at this because that's where my value comes from. No. It's like, this is something fun that I get to do. And no matter who you are, one day you won't get to do it. One day there comes a time for all of us when we have to stop playing the game. And you do not want to have to stop playing the game and say, man, I wish I would have enjoyed playing the game. I wish I would have enjoyed this. And so, you know, there's just so many fun parts of jiu-jitsu that aren't the rolling, right? There are just so many fun layers of jiu-jitsu that we get to enjoy. And so closing advice, closing thought is just make sure that you enjoy playing the game. And that is the episode. Thank you guys for checking this one out. We're going to keep it typical, kind of the new standard where all of our cool stuff that we talk about, all the super secret stuff, stays at the very end of the episode, and we just hit you with content in the beginning. But we'll give you the rundown of what we have coming up for the iSucker Jiu-Jitsu Show, Simplifying Jiu-Jitsu, and just my teaching, the stuff that I do. So first up, we have the Trinity of Guard passing out this month in April. We talked about this on the Gi Gazette, my newsletter yesterday, and it was just this idea of like my first martial arts memory is watching Bruce Lee movies with my dad. And my dad would always quote the interview where Bruce Lee would say, water can flow or it can crash. And I think that my dad would do an offensive voice considering he's a white dude. Now that I think about it, you know, it wasn't offensive for me. You know, my feelings weren't hurt. I thought it was a great voice. But yeah, his Bruce Lee impersonation was not bad. And but anyway, water can flow or it can crash. And that is really what you will notice if you check out the Trinity of Guard passing is the ability to flow on top, the ability to get heavy when you need to, the ability to flow when you need to and be light and to be smooth when you need to. It comes with the concepts and ideas that are expressed in the Trinity of Guard passing. And again, that is only available on the iSucker Jiu-Jitsu Show Pro. The link is in the description. I also have two other notes. We have a seminar coming up August 17th, and this is something that I push every year because it's for a really good cause and because I just don't teach a lot of seminars, especially in the area that I'm from. I don't really teach, you know, I teach one St. Louis seminar a year, and this will be at Watson Martial Arts on August 17th, and it is for Mission 111. You guys, I've talked about Mission 111 a lot of different times on the podcast. It's my mom's nonprofit. Most nonprofits that you hear, you can go online because they're all 501(c)(3)s, and you can actually see their spending. And if you like donate your change to one of these nonprofits, and you know, you donate the 96 cents that they ask you to, and you do it, and then you look up online how many cents of those 96 cents actually goes to the education of the kids that you paid for, or the food for the kids that you paid for, or whatever, a lot of times it's like 10% or lower. Which is, I know that sounds crazy, but like when you donate to places, and I'm not telling you not to donate, just pay attention to that. But I, that is being said, when you donate to Mission 111, 100% of the funds goes to helping the kids and the people in need that we say it goes to helping. And so, yeah, just a note on that. I really would appreciate if you guys check that out. There's also something coming out April 21st. I do it every year. Also, we usually do a telethon. This year, we're doing a not so late show. So it's kind of a spoof on a late show. And that'll be our annual kind of donation gala that we do for Mission 111. You guys can, that'll be free on Facebook and YouTube Live. I'll give you more info. I'll send it out to the Geek Gazette. So if you are part of the Geek Gazette, you should check that out, because it's like 2 hours and it's a random Sunday night where you can just be entertained by me. And then also there's, you know, if I'm involved, there's always going to be tons of black belts on this, even though it has nothing to do with jiu-jitsu. Tons of jiu-jitsu people on it. So it'll be me and a bunch of jiu-jitsu people. And so, yeah, I think you guys should check that out. But besides that, that's all I have for you guys. There's a few big announcements that we'll have coming up in the next few weeks at the end of the show. So if you're tuning in to the end, stay to the end. There's really good stuff that we talk about, and I always try to keep the advice good there too. But that's all I have for you today. Hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I hope that today's episode helps you guys suck just a little bit less at jiu-jitsu. Have a great day, guys.